Hey, everybody. Jake here. I just wanted to, before we get into this episode, I just wanted to let you know about a special offer from svslearn.com. So in celebration of Inktober, which is happening right now, you can get 30 days free of the subscription to SVS Learn. This includes the 4 inking classes that they offer. It's How to Ink, How to Ink 2.0, brush pen, using a brush pen with Peter Hahn. And then I have a new, brand new inking demo that I've done there, which I go through my tips as you ink along with me. We ink like the same drawing together. It's kind of cool. So check that out. What you're going to do is go to svslearn.com/Inktober to claim your 30 days for free. And I hope you enjoy it. And let's get into the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators and have been working in the illustration field for, what, a combined 50 years or something of experience?
7,000 years.
Something like that.
For the last 7,000 years.
Why do you guys always make fun of the part that you gave me to do?
Each week we're going to come at you with a different topic, and you're going to learn a bunch of new stuff.
Boy, you just truncated that one.
Each week you will learn. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, let's get down into it. Before we go into today's topic, I want updates from each of you guys. It's been a little while since we've talked.
Yeah.
About that. So let's hear it. What's everybody working on?
Go ahead, Will.
I am working on a project that I still can't talk about. I'm also working on another project that I don't want to talk about just yet.
Well, you just went to Colorado. Can you tell us about that? And did I?
I guess I have to now.
No, not that part. The the show, the convention, wasn't that in?
That was here.
That was in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah.
It was a. I
actually updated my YouTube video. I actually have a girlfriend right now. So I can't.
Big announcement.
Dun, 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 dun. But let's hear about the Comic-Con. You said that the Comic-Cons are down a little bit.
They're all down a little bit. I think we've hit peak Comic-Con, you know, in all the cities around the world and country. And I think the bubble is on its way down a little bit, or it might just be a correction. Who knows?
Well, there's only so many Little Mermaid posters to go around.
That's right.
Until saturation is hit.
Lee, I'm dying to know what you've been working on.
Hold on. Really quick, though. You went to Salt Lake Comic-Con.
Yeah.
What's the most you've made at that convention?
The most we made was like 13,500.
Okay, and what percentage down from that were you this last time?
Like at least 50% down.
Oh, geez.
It's substantial. But here, keep in mind, here's the thing. If we go to a show that we haven't been to, we're up. You know, we're really high.
Saturation has to play in.
Saturation, yeah. You know, you can only sell the same stuff to the same people so many times before they go, hey, I've already bought.
Unless you figure out a way to sell something that
you haven't sold before.
Well, either you haven't sold before or you're selling things that are consumable.
True. So, like ice cream. I could do that.
Yeah. Why haven't you?
Will's print and hot dog shop.
You know, I might be doing some research during this podcast, so.
I don't mean that, but like t-shirts, those get worn out. T-shirts are also its own like
nightmare
bag of problems. But a t-shirt gets worn out, a sketchbook gets used up, a pen gets used up.
True.
You know. So I wonder if there's like
I did meet someone in Colorado who is a super fan of Jed Henry. So shout out to Jed Henry.
Yeah.
And this person owns no less than 16 or 18 of his prints.
Gee whiz.
And, you know, his prints are $30 each. So what's the math on that?
Yeah, so he's been dropping some coin.
Hundreds of bucks. And they're all over the living room. So
yeah, but you only get a few of those. I mean, I have people like that too, and they'll sometimes send me a picture with all the work framed or whatever, and you see like, uh-huh, you know, 5 or 10 prints or whatever, and that's cool, but that's, you know, few and far between. The average, right. I think the average person who goes to a Comic-Con or even I'm not sure about an art fair, but I would guess is sort of the same people every year. They go, you know, mm-hmm, Salt Lake City Comic-Con's coming up, so you're going to get so many repeats. And I wonder what the percentage of new business is just walking through the door.
Exactly.
That's really your potential sales.
And we get people, yeah, that do the, we call it the history tour, where they'll go, I got that one, I got that one, I got that one, that one, that one, that one. Honey, did we buy this one? Do we own this one? And honey says, I don't know. Well, maybe we should get that one. But what if we already have it? This is the conversation we hear a lot.
Well, my new theory on art shows, and I guess Comic-Cons would fall into this same idea too, is basically a plus sign. Like where I live, I divide it off into 4 quadrants, and then I hit each quadrant each year. And that way it's been 4 years every time I make it back around.
You mean you visit one quadrant 1 year and then another quadrant another year?
Correct. And that way everything's all try to be in the same area or whatever. I'm not hitting the same shows year after year and become saturated. Yeah. So that way all the work is new by the time I show up again. And I mean, that's at least my idea is to somehow cycle them.
I wish that
that's really smart. I wish that's actually really smart.
Why do you sound surprised?
Well, I was going to say, I was drawing a parallel between that and farming, how if you grow the same crop year after year in a field in the same exact spot, it sucks out all the nutrients and your crops get worse and worse year after year. So what you have to do is 1 year you'll do corn, and then you'll do corn over in another field, and the next year you'll do, you know, potatoes in that field.
Right.
And these different things.
Farmer Jake. You know,
yeah. I've spent so many years out in the fields.
No, but that's true. I mean, that, yeah, I've heard that before too, to have a healthy soil content. But a lot of, well, we're going to get off on a tangent.
Isn't it funny that a lot of our knowledge is just what we've heard, and it could just be that someone somewhere just decided to say something and everyone just repeats it?
No, I looked that up.
Everything that we say is vetted by a staff of lawyers.
Mm-hmm. I fact-checked it on Wikipedia. All right.
All right. Well, Will used up all my time.
Yeah. So Lee's working on stuff. And then go ahead, Jake. What's our topic?
No, Lee, do you want to go?
I will go. I'm finishing up, or not finishing up, I'm midway through my picture book and I love it. I'm doing different process now for final art, working on multiple pieces at the same time versus finishing one image before moving to the next. And that's been super fun to see the whole book sort of come up in this, you know, in stages or whatever. It's pretty cool. So that's, I'm about halfway through with that. And then, I did the cover sketches for a new, the young adult novel that's coming out. It's a sequel to a book that I did 5 years ago called I Lived on Butterfly Hill. And it won a bunch of awards, and it's so beautifully written. And this is the sequel to it. And so I just want to try to do the writing justice. You know, it's a tall order because the writing is so good. But anyway, I finished that, and I started my YouTube channel, and I have one video there, and that's on how to do great illustrations. And my next one, I got so many emails after that first one, which was great. I had so much interest in it, and a lot of the emails were wanting to know about how to thumbnail. And so my next video is going to be on thumbnailing, coming up pretty soon.
Cool. Right on. Okay, so I'll just move into my own projects right now. I finished up, I sent the final like book build of the Inktober handbook. So next year around this time will be the Inktober handbook will be coming out. I don't know if that's the final name, but it's basically a collection of inking instruction and tips and how to do the challenge and my thoughts on like a bunch of, I guess, essays or chapters on just my process and thoughts on creativity and things like that. So it's good to have that off my plate. For the most part, like the biggest chunk of that. Now it's just going into all the illustrations that I have sketches for, switching those out with final inked illustrations. which that's the fun part now. I don't have to.
How are you going to publish that book? On it.
Yeah.
It's published by Chronicle Books.
Oh, cool.
Out in San Francisco. So that's going on there, but it's got me like, I kind of enjoy making a how-to book. It was really fun. It's like doing our SVS videos in book form. So it's got me wanting to do another book like that. So there's that wrapping up some, I got some notes on this Awesome Man book that I've been working on, which is a children's book. So I have to go back in and fix a few things with that. And then,
did you wrote that one?
No, that I'm just the illustrator. I'm just the illustrator. Poor me.
You definitely Eeyore'd that one.
I know. No, the author is Michael Chabon, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning fiction writer, novelist, something like that. And this is his second children's book. And I did his first children's book 10 years ago with him. And this is a follow-up to that book. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it should be it's a cool book. People should like it. I think I've enjoyed working on it. It's a cool story. So that'll be coming out of it this time next year as well.
You should buy it.
They should buy it. Sure.
Hey, before we get into our topic real quick, we have been getting emails and some texts and correspondence that people are wondering. We always have been taught, or for the past like 2 months, I guess, have been saying, oh, hey, check us out on YouTube. You'll see our face. You know, we're talking about things and we're holding stuff up to the camera and all that. And then people have been going to the YouTube channel and they're like, hey, wait a second. All I see is like the kind of the sound graphic that shows, you know, that there's volume happening. And so I just want to let you guys know that you're not crazy. Our YouTube channel is a little bit behind what we're releasing with the podcast. And so it hasn't caught up with when we started actually recording our beautiful faces.
Right.
And that's coming soon, though. We're almost to that point.
Right. The first, I don't know, 10, 15 episodes, we 20 episodes, I don't know, just recorded audio for them. So,
yep. So if you want to see the YouTube version and our faces and our interaction and me playing with a Frisbee and Will playing with a back scratcher or whatever he's playing with right now, we're almost caught up. And so you'll be able to start seeing our mugs pretty soon.
The dinky truck. Yeah. We were too stupid to record the first ones for some reason.
No, we just, here's the thing. When you're starting out something new, my advice is this, is do the version of it that gets it out into the world fastest and easiest for you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still like a finished, you know, quality piece of work, but there's a version of podcasts where it's visually like edited, you've got multiple camera setups, the sound is all perfect, you've got all the, you know, you got you know, five people in the background monitoring sound and doing all that. And that's like the ultimate version of a podcast. And sure, you could go do that, but now you're up against all these roadblocks for you getting to like that finished version. And so ours was like, what's the minimal viable like product we can release with the constraints we have on us? And that was, let's just record sound. We'll not worry about video. Let's just get a podcast going. Mm-hmm. And so once we nailed that, then it's time to, you know, I heard the term nail it, then scale it. So now we start scaling it. We're adding video. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? Maybe we'll have multiple cameras set up. Maybe we'll actually, I don't know. I kind of like that we don't bring on guests, but maybe we'll bring on a guest every once in a while. I kind of like
cats.
Right. We'll have cats to it. The worst. So today's topic. One thing about being an independent illustrator or a person who illustrates on the side or, someone who isn't fully ready to go like professional and get clients. One thing you can do to start getting income with the illustrations that you're doing is to start an online shop. And so today what I thought we'd talk about is how do you establish and start an online shop for your artwork. And both Lee, Will, and I have all done this. We've dipped our toe in it. my online shop is actually a substantial amount of my income. I know for Lee, it is for you as well. And Will, yours, you run an online shop, or you an online shop is run for you, correct? Mm-hmm. I don't know what percentage of your income it is, but it's something, right?
It's something, all right.
Okay.
No, it's actually pretty good.
Okay.
You know, I'm like multiple streams. You know, we're usually between 500 and 1,000 a month, which I'm sure that's nothing compared to what you're getting. But for the little bit of work that we do, mm-hmm. it's a nice little extra little bump.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay. So let's just dive into it. I want to go through like the steps, almost like a checklist, but we're just going to go through the steps of doing this. And the first thing is, should you be a part of a marketplace, or should you have your own shop, like your own setup? And so what's the difference between those two? A marketplace is a place like Etsy or Society6. It's a place where you go to their domain name, Etsy.com, and then there's a slash your name behind it, or whatever your shop's name is. And the items that you have in your shop are curated on their front page, maybe. People can go in and search hashtags or search terms. You know, I need a print of puppies. So they could type in puppies, and then your prints might come up if you have puppy prints. And so that is a marketplace. So you are a cog or a component in a bigger, a bigger machine of artists selling work online. The other hand is you have your own online shop, and this is something like Big Cartel. This may be just your own like Squarespace site where you have items for sale there, or maybe Shopify. All these options give you a chance to own your own domain name. So it would be, you know, for me, it's shop.mrjakeparker.com, and people go there, and it's a section of the internet that I own. It's not connected to anything else, and all of my items are up there, and I can sell things, you know, a la carte as people want them, whatever, you know, as they browse through whatever they want, that I have is available to them. So those are the two different options. What do you guys use, and what's the pros and cons between the two of them?
I'm on Squarespace now, and also Etsy. And both of those I receive monthly income from both of them. Sometimes one is heavier than the other, and then I think, okay, that's going to be the main one, and then the next month it switches. Mm-hmm. And so there's no consistency really there on how many sales go through. The pros of the Squarespace site is that, A, it's really easy. You have such flexibility in how the work is shown and how much detail you can put into it. It's a very pleasant online shopping experience for your customer, in my opinion. It walks them through the steps of buying something in a very smooth way. So I like that part of it. I don't see any cons with Squarespace at all, at least so far. Etsy is a mixed bag for sure. Etsy is a huge platform, as everyone knows. They keep changing the algorithm for how successful or how much you show up in a search. And so every time we start to get traction, it changes. All of a sudden our views go down. I mean, I'm not saying just by a little bit. It'll drop more than 50% from one month to the next. And then all of a sudden, or even more. And, you know, sometimes it'll go from, you know, down 75%, and all of a sudden you're like, God, what am I doing? And so then Etsy is just something you have to service. It is not something that you put your work up and you just leave it, and all of a sudden it's just going to continually make you money. It's something that requires a massive amount, in our experience, of effort and curation and you know, attending to these products and your site and updating new products all the time. And so just know that going in that it's bizarre, and they mess with it a little bit too much, in my opinion. But we still get a good amount of sales from it, so I like it.
I don't use Etsy, but is there a monthly fee, or is it just per sale?
I think it's per sale. My wife typically takes care of that whole side of my business, and so I'm not totally sure, but I think it's a percentage of per sale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But it's small. I mean, percentage is a good thing to talk about, because there are other sites, like if you're just starting out, maybe like a site like Cafe Press or another site like that, you might get find yourself on a page like that, and they make mouse pads and they make t-shirts and posters and frame prints and all that stuff. The problem with some of those sites like Cafe Press are A, quality control, and then B, the amount of percent they take from you is, oh my massive. Gosh, it's huge. You might get 10% of the sale, whereas Etsy, you're getting 90% of the sale.
Mm-hmm. But they don't make stuff for you.
Correct. You are still responsible for getting the product to the customer. But watch out for those ones where, do you guys have, I guess, Will and Jake, do you guys have experience in ones where?
Yeah, so I've done Society 6 and I stopped because, you know, you basically, for those who have never done anything like that, you upload your art and then they ask you, well, we can put this on, sure, we can make prints of this for you. So you're not going out and going upside down. The upside to using a Cafe Press or a Society 6 is you don't have to come up with any money. You make an account, you upload your art, and then they make the products for you. They have, you know, pillows for a bedspread, or phone cases, or like you said, you know, prints, t-shirts. But I stopped doing it for two reasons, which you already mentioned, which one was I felt like there wasn't enough margin for profit. So on Society 6, they say, okay, a t-shirt's going to cost $15 or $20 mm-hmm. at minimum. And that's with you getting zero. How much profit do you want? So if the shirt costs $25 shipped, and how much are you going to charge on top of that? $5?
Right.
So it's a $30 shirt shipped, and then you get $5 and they get $25. That was the first problem, was I just didn't feel like there was enough room for profit. The second problem was when I did see the shirt, I was like, oh, no.
Quality. Exactly. It's like an iron on.
I don't want someone mad at me for the what they got, you know, mm-hmm. stop for that reason. But let me just say also with Etsy, mm-hmm. I have seen classes on, 'cause Lee, you mentioned, you know, it's always changing. There was a guy who approached me like 5 years ago, and I didn't have any time at that time. I had so many things going, so many plates spinning. I just didn't have time. But he said, hey, my wife and I are power sellers on Etsy. Our shop grosses over $10,000 a month. Your shop sucks and it's horrible, but you have really good artwork and we follow your YouTube channel. Could we do a trade where you be the guinea pig and we teach you how to up your game on Etsy? Because we're making a class on how to run an Etsy shop the right way. But they needed my participation. I was like, can you just do it for me? You know? And they're like, no, we're not interested in that. We want to take you as a case study and show you how to do it. It just didn't work. I had books going on. I had SVS. I had convention starting. I just
didn't. Right.
Well, even if they showed you, though, the problem is that would be fine if it stayed consistent.
Mm.
The problem is they keep jacking it up and changing the whole thing.
Do you think they're doing that because they're trying to spread the wealth around and change the algorithm so that they make some of the people who aren't selling well a little more happy?
It's a great question. I mean, I would like to think that's that altruistic, but I don't.
robbing from Lee to give to the poor. Is that what's going
Quit
on?
Taking my money. It's frustrating.
I think anytime one of these social media platforms changes an algorithm, it's usually because someone's figured out how to game the system.
Mm.
And so what's happening is someone's rolling up to Etsy. They want a puppy print, so they type in puppy print. And now, you know, 50 of the top puppy print things are like not a genuine like artisan that makes, you know, handcrafted puppy things. It's like,
right.
It could be like some, you know, Chinese like wholesaler or something like that, right? I this is just me projecting, or not, you know, like this is just my hot take on it, right? Yes. But that's what I assume it might be. It's something like that. And so it's they're like, well, we need to figure out, you know, how does a genuine search get a genuine result? And so let's adjust the algorithm here a little bit and see if we can't connect the right searches with the right people. And so I think that's what's going on there. Because, you know, with YouTube, they'll look at, it used to be that you had to have a 10-minute video. And this is early days of YouTube, that you couldn't upload a thumbnail. You had to, they just pulled a thumbnail from the exact midpoint of the video. And so what people were doing was they were doing the math, and at the exact midpoint of the video for one frame, they would upload an image in their video of the thumbnail that they wanted. And so YouTube was automatically like, you know, the video could have whatever it was in it, but then the thumbnail would, which YouTube thinking is coming from the video, is actually something that they fabricated. And that's just a way that YouTube was like, okay, let's fix this and adjust it so that people, you know, people can do something better. And they're finding that the content that they want to share is 10 minutes. So that's why the algorithm favors 10 minutes. And then they find that's getting abused. So now it's 13 minutes. And so then that gets abused. So then it changes. And I think that's
my... I had heard, and this is total, like Will was saying, like it's very hearsay-ish, but I had heard that every policy that Etsy has done over the past couple of years is actually leaning towards that prefab, away from the content creator kind of thing. Like it's actually getting worse for people who make things by hand from scratch.
Mm.
And so, I mean, before they used to not even let people, if something's mass produced, you couldn't even be a part of it. Apparently I wasn't on it back then, so I don't know if that's totally true, but yeah, but now it seems like it's because at that time when we were having those discussions and we were looking into it, people were saying, hey, let's bail and go over to some of these other platforms that sort of started to spring up a couple of years ago, but then none of those took hold.
Mm. Mm.
I can't even remember what they were called.
So that is the pros and cons between a marketplace versus your own site. So just to put it succinctly, I guess, is when you're a part of a marketplace, yes, you get, you know, the opportunity for that marketplace eyes to be on you, but you're also at the mercy of what that marketplace decides is best for its, you know, the people that come to that website. So you have less control, but you're also part of this marketplace. It's kind of like being at a convention. You know, you could have your shop set up, you know, a brick and mortar shop set up over on the other side of town, or you can go to a comic book convention and you know 50,000 people are going to be walking the aisles and, you know, they get a chance to see your stuff, but then it's also this crowded marketplace and you have to set yourself apart from that. So there's pros and cons there. Okay. Next thing is you figured out whether you, so first you figured out whether you want to use a marketplace or whether you want to do your own site. And again, the drawback with your own site is you're in charge of sending people to that site. So if you have a significant amount of followers online, you know, it's easy to say, oh, by the way, I set up a shop, you know, do a post to your 10,000 followers and a percentage of those followers are going to come to your online shop and that'll work. So once you figure that out, what you want to do, go make an account with one of these things, get that set up. And the next thing is you're going to have to figure out, and they're going to ask you, how do you want to get paid? Like, how are you going to do money transactions? And so there's two options, I would say. Outside of these particular online shops that you could set up, because many of those already have credit card processing built into it, but there's Stripe and there's PayPal. And Stripe is a way to charge people's credit cards independently of anything. You just set up an account with Stripe and you link it to whatever shop that you have. And PayPal is a way to charge people's credit cards, or a lot of people just have money in PayPal. They kind of use it like another bank account. And they'll either pull money from their account and put it in PayPal, or people pay them in PayPal and they just have money like sitting in there, or they'll have it linked to some sort of card so that they can use that for online purchases. So having a PayPal account is probably, I'd say, probably smart, probably important, even though PayPal is, you know, once you get in there, it is like a pain to use a lot of the time, but I can't discount it because so many people use it, especially overseas. So both of these things, you're probably going to want, they're going to ask for a social security number. They're going to ask for a current address, a real name. They're going to ask for, you maybe a tax ID, if you don't want to use your social security, or a business, if you have a business set up, they're going to want to know specifics about that. But you got to kind of be a legitimate person in order to set up an account with those and connect it to your bank account. And so that's what you're probably going to have to do next. What do you guys use for your shops?
Stripe only. PayPal is the worst. They are the absolute worst. It seems like they came out when the internet was very young, and they never really, they keep trying to upgrade a system, or, you know, the interface and all that stuff. They keep trying to upgrade it, but it's still just locked into that old version of the internet from like 1995 or something. And Stripe is modern. They fixed all that stuff. It's modern and it's easy to get metrics and to see sales and to go back and find orders and all that stuff. If you use PayPal exclusively, you're going to be digging for stuff. If you ever got to cancel something or refund something or whatever, they just make it very clumsy. So I use Stripe.
What about you, Will?
Whatever Etsy uses. So
it's done for you.
I don't deal with it. Yeah.
Hey, what did you think of Society 6? A lot of illustrators I see kind of leaning towards that when they first start the print.
I got paid every month.
How much percentage do they take?
Society 6?
Yeah.
You set the profit.
But it's like Cafe Press where they say, hey, a t-shirt is $15 and, or a print is
right,
$40. And then you add on top of that. Right. That's good.
I mean, it would be a good, actually, I like that method. Their cost is just too high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
like if people are used to paying, I mean, how much is a t-shirt? $20 to $30.
Yeah.
So if theirs is $25 shipped and you charge $5, it's not a lot of money. So
yeah, I think they should be 50-50 in my opinion.
I use Cotton Bureau for t-shirts. And right there at Cotton Bureau, I'm making maybe $5 a shirt, $5 to $6 a shirt. And that is like a good trade-off for me because I want to have shirts available for people. And I've done shirts on my own pre-orders, so I know the exact sizes that people would need. But, oh boy, that was the biggest headache, was going out and getting t-shirts printed and shipped to me and then divided up into sizes and making sure the right order got the right size. And, like, I spent so much time doing all that. Like, I almost wished I didn't start it in the first place. And so handing all of that over to a place like Cotton Bureau, which they just have that figured out. They have it dialed in. They can see, you know, this order has this size shirt and it's this design. Boom, got it going. It's out and it's sent. And so for me, that's good. When it comes to something like prints or anything that's sort of one size fit all, that's so much easier to handle on your own that I almost don't think it's worth it to go with something like that.
I will add one little thing there, though. The one time I do think it's worth it, despite the low profitability of that model, is that if you were literally just starting and you have no idea if people are going to buy something, and if they do buy something, what are they going to buy? Mm-hmm. It's a great way to market test. You might not make that much in the first year, but that's, I would consider that kind of market research. And if you say, hey, wait, this one print is the only one that's selling. Well, what's interesting about that print? How is that print different than the rest of the stuff in your store? Then you can start to cater that. Well, what if I make another image that's sort of like that one, you know, whatever qualities that one has. And if that one sells, well, now you're onto something, that's what people will buy. So it's a way to kind of market test without spending a ton of money on a printer, trying to figure out your shipping and all that stuff. And shipping, you know, Jake just sort of touched on it a second ago, but shipping's a huge deal in how you
shipping.
Okay, I figured you were going to, but yeah. But anyway, if you don't want to mess with all that and you don't even know if people are going to buy it, you don't want to be out all that money right in the beginning. And so that's the one time where I think any of those services is fantastic, is just test and see if people buy stuff, what do they buy? And then once you start to get a, it's kind of a steady flow, then pull your business away from them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the other thing you could use too, if you're, I guess this is just online shopping. There's Square. That's another option to take payments, but that's usually for in-person payments. So I won't bring that up. Okay. So you figured out the marketplace or the website, you've figured out money, how you're going to do, take payments, PayPal versus Square or both. I do both on my shop. I will say that I use Shopify. I used to use Big Cartel for my online shop. Now I use Shopify, and Big Cartel is great because there's no monthly fee to set up a shop, and you could sell five products for free. Once you expand beyond that, then there's like a monthly fee to have that shop. I've got over 100 products from time to time in my shop when I'm selling original art or whatever. So I moved up to Shopify, which just was better for managing a lot of orders. But with those two things, you can hook up PayPal to it and you can hook up Stripe to it. And honestly, I don't ever have to go into PayPal or Stripe to like solve any problems. I just go into the shop software. And if an order needs to be returned, I just click, reimburse, and it automatically pulls the money out of PayPal or pulls the money out of Stripe and reimburses the person.
Nice.
Like it's really easy. So sometimes though, PayPal is hard when you're doing a little bit more complicated selling with it, if you're setting up subscriptions or things like that, but that's advanced and we won't get into that right now.
We should add, we're not sponsored by any of these companies to recommend them or advise against them. This is true, honest kind of reviews, but we are sponsored by somebody. Who would that be, Will?
We are actually sponsored by svslearn.com. We really love the guys over there, by the way. They do a great job teaching people how to illustrate children's books or just teaching people how to illustrate in general. And they're amazing guys. They're generous with their time. They're good looking.
Speak for yourself.
They use deodorant sometimes. And
that's great. That's really
good. SVSLearn.com, huh? That's the website?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very affordable.
All right. So the next thing is figure out what you're selling and how you're going to make it. So you're setting up a shop for the first time. What would be the easiest thing or the most frictionless thing to put in your shop? What do you guys think?
What do you mean? Like a print?
Yeah. I mean, there's 100 different things you could sell. What would be your advice would be giving
for an offer.
You know, my diesel engines haven't sold well in my shop.
I have bowling balls. I got all the bowling balls out in the garage. None of them are selling.
Come on. I mean, you wouldn't start off with t-shirts, would you? Or would you?
No. I kind of avoid that stuff anyway. I say keep it all on the art side of things and keep it with prints and make them small. I wouldn't start with a giant poster or anything like that. Keep it 11 by 14 is a size that I absolutely love for prints. Mm-hmm. It makes it easy. People can frame it inexpensively. It's easy to ship. It's easy to transport if you're doing shows or whatever. So, I mean, it's very versatile size. And I'll add to that too. I used to have a bunch of different sizes and I cut that out because I found that the smallest and cheapest size you offer is the size that most people will buy. Mm-hmm. And so if you sell a 5x7, version of a print that's available at 11x14 as well, they will almost always buy the 5x7 version.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I stopped selling the small ones cause I was cannibalizing my own sales.
It's funny.
I found that too.
Like people, sometimes you'll make a piece of art that just really hits someone's soul and they're in that mode of, I've got to have this. I just have to have it. And one thing that we've learned is if they're in that mode, they'll buy the bigger one. So if you have a small one, you will cannibalize the sale of the bigger one for that person. Just a little side note. So one piece of advice that I've gotten from a lot of people that sell at conventions is, our small stuff sells the best. And we sell one size. I'm sorry, we sell two sizes for the same price. Mm-hmm. It's the same price.
Oh, really?
Because we don't want to cannibalize our sales. And I hope no one takes offense at this, but the people that are always encouraging us to sell smaller prints make less money than we do.
Mm. Right.
And the people that make more money than we do tend to not offer really small sizes of prints. So
yeah, that's right.
Piece of advice I would give is, don't feel like you have to satisfy every single price point.
And they'll ask. Yeah, don't worry about that. I agree 100% with what you're saying there. We noticed it one year when we were doing shows, and it was the first year I started doing greeting cards. Mm-hmm. And people were just racking up on the greeting cards, and they'd be bringing prints over to me saying, do you have this in a greeting card? Do you have this in a greeting card? I was like, wow, you got a lot of greeting cards there. You want to send it? They're like, no. I'm just going to frame the greeting card.
Right.
No.
And I was like, all right, pull all the greeting cards out of here.
Or at least only offer greeting cards in prints that you don't, or images that you don't sell as a print, right?
Correct.
Did you say that? Okay. So
why wouldn't you sell it as a print?
Because you're going to cannibalize your sale.
Yeah.
If it'll sell as a greeting card, though.
If you have an image that you could sell for a $20 print, or a $2 greeting card, and people want to frame it, they're going to buy the $2 greeting card. So what I'm saying is, if you have an image,
let me just help you out and say what you really want to say is, don't sell the greeting card. Just sell it as a print.
Sell it as a print. Or if you have an image that would be great for a greeting card, don't sell it as a print.
Right. If it's kind of set up for a greeting card, that's right. True. Hey, one thing I should add that I see sometimes in new illustrators' stores is heavily watermarked images. Please don't do that. Don't put copyright, low transparency copyright symbol across the whole image or whatever. Nobody's going to steal your image. And if they do, just be flattered by it. It makes the artwork look terrible.
Right. Right. I would say too, well, we'll get into that in a couple sections there, but I want to go back to what other ideas you could sell. So print's obvious because you can make a print for $1, $2, $5, depending on how nice the inks are, how nice the paper is that you're using. If you go really cheap, like Will does, it could be 75 cents or a quarter.
are we digressing into this mode now?
No, I'm sorry. But the thing is a print has a perceived value to it of this. I'm buying, people aren't thinking I'm buying a piece of paper. They're thinking I'm buying this artwork, and this artwork is going to add something to my workspace, to my home, to the living room. And so what they're buying is the image, not the paper. And so that's why you can charge $20, $30, $40 for a print, because there's a value to it there. And so that's why they're a great thing to like get started in. There's other things though. If your work doesn't look good at prints, then maybe look into making your first zine. And it could be something, photocopied and stapled. And that was the first thing I ever sold in a shop was a little Kinko's produced black and white collection of my sketches. And it was stapled, and I actually stapled them myself. And the second time I did it, I had I splurged and paid for Kinko's to staple them myself. And I sold them for $5, and they cost me, 50 cents to make. And I turned a profit on this first, this first little thing. And people collect those, and you might find the right audience that is into that. So zines are cool. self-published books are fun too, and you can do black and white, you can do color. Again, there's we should probably go into doing an episode on just self-publishing books, but I will say there is some startup setup costs for that, but people always love books, and there's no shortage of bookshelf space in people's homes as well. Other things are sticker packs, buttons. You could do shirts, but again, you come into problems there with making sure you order the right amount of sizes, you know, the right amount and the right sizes. You don't know what's going to happen there. That's why I suggest doing pre-orders, but I'll get into that in the next or in a later section. There's pins and these like little metal pins that people have been making. Those are highly collectible and I don't know, a cool like creative thing you could do with your art as well. So there's a lot of options for you. Figure out what your artwork works best for what product and do a little research on how what it takes to make those things and figure out what it is that you want in your shop. Okay. So figure out where you're going to sell it. You figured out the money. You figured out what you're selling, how you're going to make it. The next step is branding. How are you going to brand your shop? And for me personally, I branded everything. I used to have a shop that was branded Agent 44, and that was based on my online handles that I used for Twitter and what was it? My blog and things like this is like 10 years ago. I since shifted away from that and just branding everything online with my name because I knew I'd be getting into publishing, and on publishing on the covers of the books, I wanted people to see Jake Parker and know that it was me and not Agent 44. And so I switched to using my name for everything. But your shop could be something. It doesn't have to be branded your name. It could be something like, you know, if you're way into robots, it could be like the robot landing page or something like that, or the robot extreme, or I don't know. I can't think of anything that's not lame right now. Or it could be like the robot zone, or maybe you're into bees and honey and all of your artwork has something to do with like it uses bee iconography and imagery, and so all your prints are based off of that. So your whole thing could be called the honeycomb, you know, or the beehive. And the point is you want to make it something memorable that people are going to be drawn to, and something consistent. So pick a color that's going to be consistent through your shop. Pick a design that's going to be consistent through it. Figure out if you want to do, you know, if your art is black and white, maybe you just do black and white photos for the whole thing. Or maybe, you know, if it's a honey thing, maybe you use yellow, and yellow's like for the font, for everything. So figure out a logo for your shop, figure out a font for your shop, figure out a look and a vibe to it. You're going to look and feel a lot more established when people roll up to your shop than if you just slapped your name on there, had no thought for anything, posted up your first print and just let it go. What do you guys think about that? How have you guys branded your shops?
Well, I guess what you're basically saying is that I'm sure people understand what you're saying, but it's just give people something to grab onto, some kind of consistent thing. Every single, you know, product that you guys buy gone through the same process, and they had to grab onto something, whether it's a color or a shape or the Nike swoosh or, you know, whatever. That's what people remember. And so for me, I started branding a while back, just me as an illustrator. My most successful print image was this image of a guy riding bikes, and he's got this light contraption kind of coming off his back, and just him against a kind of an orangish background. That was my best selling image, and that's one that got shared the most online. So I said, that's the one I'm going to rally around. And so when I do shows, that's the big image that's on my banner. If you go to my website, that's the image that brands it. And that just tended to be just because it was the most used image or the most liked image. And that's why getting a little bit of market research going can help you if you do have one image that's starting to be, you know, the known one for you. If you have one that gets shared a bunch online or Instagram or whatever, you know, maybe lean into what people are already liking.
Cool. What about you, Will?
I'm sorry, I was distracted.
So now you know that this podcast is totally legit, not scripted in any way.
I was like, how can I save this? Go ahead and ask me the question.
Okay, so we're talking about branding, Lee. Right. For those of you just joining us in the podcast, we're talking about branding. How would you brand yourself? I noticed something you've done, Will, is instead of you've actually come up with like a logo for your name, for Will Terry. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, Helvetica typed out Will Terry. You actually have like a nice, cool, cursive
logo
sort of style to your thing. Was that intentional, and why'd you do that?
I did that because you did that.
Where can I see that? Is that on your website?
Yeah. It's on my website. It's on my YouTube channel. So I started noticing that I had all these different hubs, or not hubs, spokes to the wheel, you know, different sites and different places where my work could be found. And I just thought, I really did get it from you.
Oh, okay.
I'm on your website now. I'm not seeing the cursive one. I just see it kind of typed out at the top.
Go to Instagram.
Ah, you left your actual site sort of hanging.
Oh.
Yeah. I think it used to be on there, or at least it was on your blog.
He's just not seeing it.
No, I promise. If I pull up on your page, it's just typed across the top.
Man.
All right, now you're going to make me go look.
Busted.
Go look at Instagram. Go to my...
I'm looking on Instagram now.
Oh, you know what? Anyways, it was on there.
Let's not get lost in the weeds so here.
No, let's dive deep.
Hold on, here's what happened. I'm going to blame it on Aaron, who's on the other side of the cubicle. I had it on my site, and then when we redid it on Squarespace, we didn't put it back up there. So that's something that I need to do. Uh-huh. But if you look at my YouTube channel, so YouTube came up with this thing where you can have a little logo that floats over your video.
Mm-hmm.
And it resizes based on what size screen someone's watching, or how they maximize or minimize their browser. So it's dynamic.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I have it on there as well, and a few other places. But yeah, it's on my Instagram. So, and I do feel like that really does help to unify your brand, you know?
Yeah.
I put it on my banner for shows. So it's at the top, so that it has cohesion. We send people to Instagram.
It takes, you know, there's this old adage that it takes 7 impressions for someone to finally remember, you know, to like link an image to a brand, to, you know, something that is actually available to them to purchase. And so if those 7 impressions aren't linked together by a color or by a logo or by some sort of like consistent element, then they're not going to count, and that person's not going to, connect the dots. But if they're consistently seeing, oh, I saw a YouTube video by Will Terry, here's that logo from Will Terry. I went on Instagram, I liked an image, and it was by this guy, Will Terry. I was at the Comic-Con, I was walking by and I saw the poster or the banner, and it had that same logo. And now I ended up on this shop page and I see it there, you know, it's all linking. Oh, I've had a history with this person, you know, let's see what they're selling. Let's see what they have. And there's something that, you know, matches up with something that I need. And so that's why you want to actually take some thought and put a little time and effort, you know, just an extra day on figuring out what that is going to be. And actually for me, that's maybe the most fun part of setting up a shop, is figuring out what it's going to look like and what's the brand, the vibe, the feel going to be about it. Mm-hmm. All right. So you figured that up. Now it's time to
Wait, can I add one thing to the previous topic? I made a little note on what you're choosing to sell. What do you guys think about, like, if you guys, listeners, have been to Cafe Press, you can literally just slap your image on 100 images or 100 products at once, mouse pads and ashtrays and backpacks and all that stuff. I would recommend avoiding that shotgun approach. Would you guys agree with that or disagree?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I mean only because you're not, they just don't, there's not a lot of cream left over for the artist. I mean, like what would be your reason? Like, let's say it was 50-50, like you suggested earlier.
I still wouldn't sue. You know, even if the artist got the lion's share of the work, I still would avoid.
Now, you know that I have to get you on this, because if you were making $50,000 a month, you're saying you wouldn't do it.
$50,000 a month on all these like various products across the board?
For some reason, some strange reason, everyone wanted a piece of Lee White from Zazzle.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to say no. You can't have it.
You're lying to me.
No, I would not do it. You can't be a sellout like that. It looks so cheap to have your products on anything. I hate to use the word sellout, but I guess that's what it looks like to me. It's like, just buy something with my product on it. It comes across as desperate.
I'm going to agree with Lee in that you end up clouding the water when you put so much stuff out there. So, and really this episode here is for that person who, you know, is maybe pursuing illustration on the side, or maybe they're just dipping their toe in it for the first time. And maybe they've got like a backlog of some cool illustrations that they made. They're building an audience. The advice for that person is I would start off with 1 to 5 products, not even products. Like if it's prints, 1 to 5 prints. If it's maybe it's the same image, but it's spread out between just a handful of little objects that you could sell. Maybe you do try to do it on a mug, but you don't go 10 products in. You see how that mug sells, you know, if it's an image that goes perfect with that, or you see how that t-shirt sells, or you see how that print sells, and then branch out from there, because it's going to give you an opportunity to talk about new things in your shop. If you just say, hey, my shop's open, there's 100 things available, go check it out. Next week, you can't say, oh, there's 100 things available still. What you want to say is, hey, now right. I'm launching, you came to my shop last week, we did prints, now I'm launching, you know, this is next month, now I'm launching a new print. Or now I'm launching, you know, this book. Or now I'm launching this greeting card, or whatever it is. It
just, yeah, Will.
To talk about,
I'm going
to
bust you guys.
Yeah, Will, sell out.
I love the fact that you locked yourselves in so that I can tear you down right now.
Hey, you guys go to Will Terry's website so you can get a Will Terry koozie, beer koozie, with one of Will's images on it.
Now, here's the thing:
be a bouncy ball.
It's nice and all that you guys pretend to have morals, but I'm going to actually pull out a personal anecdote here. This is in all seriousness. I used to, when I go on road trips with Wayne to go to different conventions, sometimes a couple of times, like 3 years ago, the subject came up. If something happened to your spouse, would you ever get married again? And okay. My answer was no.
This episode's taking a left turn.
Go on, really? Left turn. No. I was like, no, I'm 53. I'm 50, you know, 50, whatever, however old I was at the time. I'm like, no, I don't see myself ever going down that road again. And I mean, I'm dating somebody very seriously now, mm-hmm. after the passing of my wife. Mm-hmm. And I
never saw yourself doing this.
I did not. And I don't believe that you can say what you would do unless you're actually faced with that situation. So when you say, no, I would claim moral high ground. I would hate $50,000 a month.
I will bust you back. Because
I'm not ready to bust someone too. Just go for it.
Because there is and again, we're in a position of being able to do this, and I feel very fortunate with that. But I'm offered a lot of books. Matter of fact, there was one 2 weeks ago that I was offered that I just did not think, based on the work that I'm doing right now, that I would be a good fit for. And I turned it down, and the pay was fantastic, and it was a good publisher and all that. It just didn't line up with what I was doing. So I did exactly what you're saying, is I had the opportunity. The money is right there. I could have easily done it and just said, oh, I'm going to go for the money. But I didn't. It wasn't the right one for the job. It wasn't right for me right now.
Okay, but that's a different situation. I've turned down plenty of work.
Right.
Okay. What I'm saying is,
you're saying if you had to take it, if I was hungry,
royalties off of work that you already did, hours already banked, that's a totally different thing.
You're saying if I'm desperate, I'm on the street, I'm going to lose my house, all of a sudden my mouse pad starts to sell.
You're anything but desperate, but
you're hypothetical.
$1,000 a month for doing nothing.
No, at a certain point, you have to say, here's what I believe in, and here's how I want to be seen. And that becomes exactly what Jake's talking about, which is your brand. Is the things you're on, the things you sell. And for me, I could go with cheaper printer paper for my prints to make my margin go up. I use great paper, the best paper I can.
Right.
Did you just lose them?
Just lost because, you know, when you lie, the technology gods know.
No, shut you down.
Let me tell you this.
My turn.
No, hold on. I got to tell you about you. Now that we've frozen him out of the picture, we'll have to claw his way back in. Don't hire you. It's going to happen to you. So when you did your Inktober poster, mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. and you put it out there for sale, you didn't put a limited number. Mm-hmm. You were going to get the order from the printer based on how many orders you took.
So, right.
Its power went out, he says. It must be having a lightning storm back in Kentucky or something.
Oh, geez.
My point is, like, at what point do you grow a set of morals on a print like that? Like, what if you sold, let's say you sold 1,000. I don't know how many you sold, but you sold a lot.
Well, you're changing the argument. Sure. I didn't put that print on T-shirts, on mugs, on... on what is it, beer koozies or whatever, on keychains,
right?
On Vans shoes or anything like that. I didn't do that. I just sold it as a print. I think that's two different things, right? I think.
So why is a print so much more moral than a mug?
I'm not saying it's more moral. I'm saying you don't want to. I think what you do is it's the large print versus a small print, like eating sales. So for me to put that image on 100 different other products, I'm going to have to go through Society 6 and I'm going to make, you know, $1 or $2 off of each of those things or whatever. On the print that I made myself, I'm making, you know, 90% of that sale goes right into my pocket and it doesn't dilute, you know, having that thing spread out over 100 different products doesn't dilute the sales of those prints. And I think too, like I designed it to be a print to go on the wall. And that's something that I want to offer and I want to share with people. And it's not something that I would want to put on 100 different things. I think the other thing though, is in order for this to be like applicable to our audience, you know, there's a handful of people out there that have launched a webcomic and they've gotten 2 million followers in 6 months. And I've watched it this last year. I've seen that happen the last couple of years, two or three times. People going on Instagram with their webcomics, exploding in popularity. And what's the thing that they do? Yeah, they put it on some T-shirts. They open up a Society 6. They do that stuff, but then they're funneling it all into like, get this book, this collection of my comics. You know, here's a new set of T-shirts that I've come out with. They didn't put all their comics on all the T-shirts. They didn't put all their comics on all the different products. They're still like, they're curating basically. They're curating what it is, and I think that is good advice. They, you know, and if that person wanted to go put it on 100 different things, I wouldn't blame them either because they have 2 million followers on Instagram.
So I think
when you've got 5,000 followers on Instagram, I think you spread yourself a little thin on that fan base. And instead, I would, you know, if you have 5,000 followers on Instagram, 1 to 2% of those followers are actually going to buy something. I think you focus them into one or two products. You don't spread it out.
Are
200
you
different products.
Going to end your filibuster at some point.
Moving on to the next topic.
So what I hear, at first I thought it was a moral argument, but it sounds like you're making a business argument.
It's a business argument.
Strategy argument. Okay, I'm cool with that. And Lee's not here. I told him in the text that I'll speak for him.
Okay.
Just give me his questions and I'll give you the right answers.
All right. Next up, we've got a, man, this episode's cooking right along. I didn't realize how much time we've eaten up. Next up is setting up the shop. One thing you really need to make certain of and be careful of is the images of your products. Mm-hmm. So like Lee was saying, don't cover them up with what are those called? Watermarks and, you know, do not copy or do not distribute or whatever, anything like that. You want to sell your image as best as you can. So what I would do, I wouldn't upload a high res version of it that someone could just download and print, but I would put up a nice clean image of it, take nice photographs of the products that you're putting out there, whether it's prints or, you know, or it is a t-shirt or something like that. Just present it well, put in a little extra time to make this stuff look good and professional and clean. You're going to want to have good product descriptions figured out instead of just saying shirt for sale. Tell what I like doing is telling a little story about the print that I'm selling or the shirt that I'm selling. You know, maybe that this shirt's going to give you awesome powers and everyone's going to think you're handsome, you know, tongue in cheek though, but just something where you're communicating and you're having a little bit of a, you know, you're engaging the person there a little bit than just saying shirt for sale. So come up with cool descriptions, setting up your shop, putting in good, clean artwork, good, clean images of it, show close-ups of what the person's going to get. I always like to take photos, actual photos of the print, like at an angle, close-ups. So you could see like the print quality of it, the paper quality of it. And then one thing too, do not neglect this on your shop, is have a really captivating, I don't want to say captivating, but have an about page that sells yourself, that just shows what your personality is, what your shop is all about, maybe a little bit of where you came from and why you're doing this here. And all of this stuff helps you make a sale, and it's something I don't want you to neglect in setting up your shop. You've come this far. We've made some products. Don't drop the ball in the about page and the product descriptions and the product images. Do you have anything to add to that, Will?
No, you said it really well.
Okay.
Back.
Next thing.
He's back. So Lee, you gave some really good answers while you were gone. And we came to the conclusion that you were wrong, but then you became right.
Well, whatever Will said, don't do the opposite and you'll be good to go.
I put Will in his place and he is since apologized.
I've apologized.
So basically, he was turning it or misunderstood it as a moral argument about you shouldn't be so greedy to make all this extra money versus a business argument, which is what I was trying to make. Like you're going to do better and make more money if you limit the options and really focus in on something, on one or two things.
Perfect.
Things. The next thing we talked about was setting up the shop and making sure you have good product images, a good about page, good descriptions for the things that you're doing. I also like to say in the description a little bit about the object, a little bit of the story to it maybe, and then specifics like, it's made on this paper. It's made with this ink. It's this size. It's going to be shipped this method. I also talk about like with my books and with my prints. You know, I pack these things in like sturdy containers. They're double packed. Like I do bubble wrap and then a heavy duty cardboard box, book box. For my book, so that you know, everything's going to arrive like safely and undamaged, and then so that just inspires a little bit more confidence, and they understand why there's a shipping and handling charge that goes with it as well. Okay, so that is you've got your shop set up. You paid close attention to all those details there. It's time to launch it, And one thing I recommend is, and if you listen back a few episodes, we talk about building your social media platform and how to do that moving forward. But not only building social media, but building an email list and just building up a network of people who love your work. Now's the time to use that and to, you know, you've been posting and posting and sharing and sharing. Now it's your time to ask. And it's saying, here is something that I've created. Come check it out. Come get it. Come buy it. One thing you could do, though, is we talked about this a little bit earlier, is do pre-orders. And that's how you know exactly how much to get. So you're going to say, these things don't ship for a month. I'm taking pre-orders for 2 weeks, just so I know how many to do. And once the pre-order is done, you know, that's as many as I'm going to print. So get in on this now. That's one way to sell it. Or you could say, you could give some sort of advantage to people who pre-order. Like everyone who pre-orders is going to get a little sketch to go with it, or they're going to get this extra thing like a free sticker or something like that to entice them to pre-order right then. So you could do like a limited run, or you could do like a limited offer with the pre-order. But the reason I like doing that is now you know you're not going to be stuck with 1,000 things you can't sell, you know, 1,000 books or 1,000 prints or something like that. You can go in and you can make exactly the amount you need plus 10 or 15% that you could sell over the rest of the year or the coming months. So I would do that. Is there anything else you guys would add in launching or telling people to come to your shop? Like, how would you get the word out? How would you get those sales coming?
I mean, I like your idea. I like what you've done with projects. That's really what I would do is announcing a shop is, I don't know, to me is boring. Mm-hmm. But sharing a project that you're working on is really interesting. And one thing that I would try to do when I was releasing new prints is make sure that they're available. So when the first time you show that image on social media, that's the time that you're going to get the biggest amount of excitement, enthusiasm, and that's the time that you want to be able to say, and it's available over here. So to me, the announcement of a shop is boring. The announcement of a project is what will bring people to your shop.
Yeah, that's gold. I'm just learning that now. I always post an image and then people start asking about, hey, is this available somewhere? I'm like, yeah, sure, it's available. And then I got to panic and get it up on my site and try to figure all that stuff out in a panic. So I'm just learning that lesson.
The times that I have done the best in selling prints or selling a book or anything like that is where I've spent a month or 2 months posting almost every day or every other day process images of the thing I'm making, the thing I'm working on. So like the last 2 years I've done these Inktober prints, and these are these big, 3 foot wide prints that are filled with all these characters. And I spend each day of Inktober drawing a character, adding them to it. And I call them the Travelers series. And so it's these travelers, and one's sci-fi and one's fantasy. And this year it's going to be something else. But every day I'm drawing them, I'm adding them to them, I'm talking about it. This is going to be a print. This is going to be a print. And it gets people like really amped up and excited. Like, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to want to do this. And so when I finally launch that, I don't have to explain what it is. I already have people like lined up ready to buy it. And so that is, you know, don't discount, like, you don't have to like spring it on people. You can like let them in on the process and know that this is coming. Mm-hmm. Okay. So lastly is fulfilling. And you've got your orders, you've launched it, you've got your shop running. Every week you're getting a handful of orders. How do you actually fulfill it? Do you ship yourself? Do you drop ship? Do you use print on demand? What's the difference between those three, and is one better than the other? What do you think, Lee?
I think you should probably define those three to people, because a lot of people probably don't know the difference between what those are.
So first thing is shipping yourself. That's one option. What you're going to do there is you could pack up each item, go to the post office every week, wait in line, pay for postage, and send your items off. I used to do that. It was the worst. Then I discovered Indicia, which is like a basically a service that connects you to the post office, and you have your own scale and you have your own printer, and it's probably $200, $300 to get that set up. And in DC, it costs $15 a month or something like that. So I wouldn't do this until you've got enough orders coming in where you can justify the cost of it. But you get a discount in all your shipping, so it's cheaper than going to the post office by, I don't know, 10, 20%. And you can weigh it, you can put the address in and print a postage label, slap it on your container, on your shipping container, and then just drop off your packages at the post office without waiting in line. You could stick it right in the box, or some post offices have like a section for pre-postaged mail, and you could just leave it there and not worry about it. And that is what I do now, because I personally like adding little touches to the packages. I like, if it's someone I know, adding a note, or if it's a name that I see, you know, someone who's ordered something in my shop, adding a little note, thank you, or throwing in extra stuff into them. You know, just this last week, someone ordered a print, or no, it was a book, and I had an extra copy of Rocket Raccoon laying around that I had worked on, and Marvel had sent me these extra copies, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to stick this in here and send it off. And so that, you know, they're going to open their package, they're going to get their book, and they're also going to see this signed copy of Rocket Raccoon. I like adding little surprises like that in there. So that's why
Is that your dog?
Yeah.
Surprises, like the dog barking.
Can you go see what his problem is? Thank you.
He wants to be on the podcast.
So there's that. The other thing is drop shipping. This costs a certain amount either per package or a certain monthly fee, but basically you send all of your stuff to a warehouse and they get your orders in, they see what goes out, and they just ship it for you. And that is definitely an option if you're shipping hundreds of things every month. So I would definitely look at that once your shop gets humming along and going. And then the last one is print on demand. And this is Society 6. This is, you know, if you end up using Amazon to do books, you know, their self-publishing thing to do books, or any sort of thing like Society 6. Basically what it is they, when the orders come in, they make it right then and there, and then they ship it out. So if it's a t-shirt that they're doing, they actually have these printers that will print. It's like an inkjet printer for t-shirts. So they'll print it on a t-shirt. If it's a print, they'll actually have their printers there and they'll print them out and they'll send those out. And so that's why you're making a little bit less money with them. It's because they're basically doing all the work. They're making the object, they're packaging it up, they're shipping it out. They have to pay for the shipping, they have to pay for the packaging, they have to pay for the labor, they have to pay for the production. And at the end of the day, once all their costs are covered and they made a little profit, then you get to decide what's on the top of that, you know, what you get to add to it to make your money off of it. So those are the three options. There's one is way less work, but you make way less money. One is way more work, but you make way more money. And that's kind of your two options. What do you guys use and what do you guys do?
Yeah, I do the same thing you do. We've got our own scale, and I'm not sure which service we use, stamps.com maybe. Mm-hmm. But it interfaces with somehow with the post office, and we weigh it. One thing I will add to what you're saying is to research, if that's the method you want to use, and that goes for, you know, just mailing it yourself if you only have one or two items, or if you're going to do what me and Jake are talking about here, where you have a little bit more volume and you're still doing it kind of yourself and printing out your own stamps or whatever, is figure out how much things weigh. And it's very, very important to be precise, because the post office is funny. Once something goes, you know, 1 ounce, one little, you know, hundredth of an ounce over a certain weight, like say something's under 2 pounds, it ships for this much money. If it goes over 2 pounds by anything, it ships for a lot more money. And so I had custom, like we have cardboard mailers for my prints. And then the backer board that we use clear bags, mm-hmm. clearbags.com. They have, you know, plastic sleeves and backer boards and all that. And they did not have the matching size backer board for the envelope that we use, and we use a rigid mailer. And if we could go down to that smaller size mailer, things are much lighter and my shipping is a lot less. And so we actually had custom backer boards cut so I can go to that smaller size. It literally puts me like 1 ounce under what it would have been. And now my shipping is, you know, like half.
Oh, that's cool. You get backer boards with holes punched in them.
I'm serious. It makes, and then also think to yourself, like if somebody orders 2 prints, well, what does that mean? And 3 prints? I mean, rarely does somebody order more than 3 for me. That's probably a biggest order as I typically do. But you got to figure all that stuff out. And if you're just doing 1 a month, not going to be that big of a deal. But if you're doing, you know, if you want to really get into it, kind of look at the numbers and weigh stuff and see what you can do.
Cool. What do you do well?
I use Wayne.
Okay.
No, I absolutely feel like I'm dying when I go to the post office. Like life is being sucked out of me. And so we bought the Dymo label maker deal, the Indicia service. But he does that for me, so I don't do any of it. And it's
right.
It's perfectly for me.
That's the other thing too, is if you, you know, if you're solo on this, you're going to have to do everything yourself. But what's great is partnering up with someone who might be like, we have this other side business called Art Drop Club. And we, me and Aaron were doing it, and Aaron was handling like all the shipping, and he ended up finding someone who didn't mind like coming in and making a little bit extra money and just doing all the shipping for us. And so that's like, once your shop gets going, think about what you want to do most. Do you want to be packing orders every week or making more stuff? And so factor in, you know, setting aside 20, 30, 40 bucks a week to pay someone to come in and spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours shipping out all your orders. And so that's like, that's just something to think about moving forward is how are you going to scale this? How are you going to grow this? Because once you've taken the advice we've shared today, you guys are going to have nothing but success. So be thinking in the future how this is going to grow and how you're going to want to handle things in the future.
Should they send us a percentage of sales?
Yep. And so that's the last bit of advice is... whatever money you make from your shop, you can mail it to P.O. Box, just a flat, I don't know, 50 bucks off the top. No, no. Whatever money you make, that's your money. You use it how best you want. Hopefully it's to pay your bills. And the other thing too is like, think too, I did this before. I was like, my shop made so much money this week. Sweet. I'm going to pay off this. I'm going to spend money on that. And then the next, you know, 6 months later, I ran out of all my supplies of everything. And I'm like, shoot, I don't have any money to pay for new boxes or new bubble wrap. So one thing is every month, you know, set aside a certain amount of your money that comes in from your shop to pay for just supplies or whatever else you might need to run your shop. So don't,
I'll add to that. If things are going well and you're kind of enjoying this process of selling things online and it's going smooth, look for the sales and then buy in bulk. That's what I did for my printer. I buy on rolls from Epson Bright White watercolor paper. Saw that thing go on sale it went on sale in the shop that was selling them. I think B&H Photo Supply was selling them for pretty cheap. And then Epson had a huge rebate, like buy 2 rolls, get 1 free on top of that sale. Dang. That B&H was doing. So I bought like 12 rolls of this. I have like 400 linear feet of print paper now.
That is nice paper. Like, that's, you are really paper. Doing the best stuff.
It's gorgeous paper, but you know, out of those 12 rolls, 4 of them were free.
That's really cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's tuck this topic into bed.
This is a good one, by the way.
Yeah. I told Lee what we're talking about today. He's all, really? That's all? Well, you just wait.
It's true. I thought we were just going to say, okay, everybody sign up for Squarespace. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. No, honestly though, there's so many different variables involved in this, and really I feel like this episode should just get you like pointed in the right direction, but go do your research. Look up Etsy, look up Big Cartel, look up Shopify, look up PayPal, look up Stripe. Do some of your own homework and figure out what is best for you. But hopefully this is enough information. Like if you have been thinking about this and wondering about it, hopefully this is enough information, like get you started on the right foot. And we'll leave it at that. All right. I'm going to take us out unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
No, let's do it.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, everybody. 3-Point Perspective is made by... It's made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And your hosts have been Will Terry, Lee White, and Jake Parker. Will Terry's artwork can be found online at willterry.com, and you can follow him on Instagram at willterryart. Lee White's artwork can be found at leewhiteillustration.com, and you can follow him at leewhiteillo on Instagram. And I'm Jake Parker. My artwork can be found online at mrjakeparker.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at Jake Parker. And please go check out all our shops just to like do a little bit of your own homework to see how we run things. So just do a search on Etsy for Will Terry. And then I believe our shops, Lee and my shop, is just linked straight on our website. And check that out.
Mine's probably podcast. Linked there
too. What's that?
Mine's probably linked on my website too.
Yeah, Will's is probably linked there too. Sorry. Anyways, podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's Sugg with two G's. You can find his work or hire him to edit your own podcast at alexsugg.com. Podcast is produced and uploaded and posted online by Tanner Garlick, and you can find his artwork at tannergarlickart.com. And if you like this episode, leave us a comment on the iTunes, just telling us how we're doing. If you didn't like this episode, go ahead and leave a comment there. I read one where a guy basically said, we don't know what we're doing.
Nice. I haven't seen that one.
It was from a while ago. Yeah. That's back when we didn't know what we were doing.
Those are the best comments, by the way.
But no, the ones from this summer, I read through for the last couple of months and shared it with the guys, but there's a lot of good stuff. So it's nice to know that we're actually doing something that people like. So, subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on Spotify as well. And then we have over on svslearn.com, there is an episode thread about this episode where you can join this discussion, ask further questions, or share things that you've learned with the community over there. All right, that's it, everybody. Thank you, and we will see you next time.